Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with singer, dancer, actor, Early Dean. Early has been in many, many shows at the West Coast Black Theater Troupe, so if you have seen shows there, you have seen Early in many, many different shows with many, many different characters. He's about to perform a one-person show, something he wrote himself, based on the music of Teddy Pendergrass, the creation of which you will hear him talk about in the show. Early's story is interesting because it is the story of someone who discovered his talent and his delight in performing very early in his life, but it took him a long time to do, as he says, develop the passion for the work. And it is only after he developed the passion for the work that he became able to be the performer that he was always meant to be. Listen to the way in which life helped him to focus in such a way that he can say that he loves the work. And, of course, when you see him on stage, you can see that it is true. Okay, hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice, oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
is about being the person you really are. Not some facsimile, not some version, not some idea that you have of the kind of person you should be or that other people would want you to be or is the person that other people will like or love or want to hang out with or hire. No, the person you really are. There's so much pressure on us to be and do what other people want us to be or what other people think we should be. And so many of us succumb to that. But there is a person that you really are. And the comfortable life, the happy life, the fulfilled life is a life lived when you are the person you really are, when you're not second-guessing yourself, when you're not trying to be something, when you're not wondering if this or that about you is okay. So the Lynn Show is about saying, if you are not being your whole person, the person you really are, and we all know it when we're not being ourselves, well, it may not be too late to recover what you may have had to hide or even lost in your childhood. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And my interview today is with Early Dean. And if you were listening to the run-up, you heard me say that Early discovered his talent, his ability to sing, his ability to move an audience very, very young, 7, 8, 9, 10. All of his early life, which took place in an environment that encouraged this, his church and his school were all about performing. And so he was continually encouraged to learn, to demonstrate his talent, and he got a terrific amount of support for his natural ability, his natural talent. But as you will hear him say, that experience, the ease with which he was able to have an impact on an audience, made it difficult for him to take this work as seriously as he finally became able to take it. It's a really interesting story, a really coming-of-age story, and it makes the point that I am trying to make in this show, which is that it is never too late to be who you really are. And Early Dean now is who he really is. You can see it when you see him on stage. And as I say in this interview, I'm interviewing him because he's about to do his one-person show, Happy Birthday, Jethro Jenkins, at the West Coast Black Theater Troupe. So, here now is Early Dean. Okay, so I'm here with Early Dean, mm-hmm. and I'm interviewing Early, mm-hmm. because he's about to do a one-person show called Happy Birthday, Jethro Jenkins.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Okay, good. So I'm explaining to Early that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. It's clear that you make your life as a performer, a singer, a dancer, an actor. Would that be accurate?
That is accurate. That is how I make my living.
Yes. Yeah, okay, good. All right, good. So this is my one question. Do you know, can you remember, the very first time you felt like performing, people said you were a good performer, you were drawn to music or dance or any of that?
I do remember the very first time.
Okay, yes, so yes. Tell me.
I do remember the very first time. I grew up in West Coast Center for Human Development. It's a church school and we focused a lot on performing.
Grew up, what does that mean? How old were you?
I was born and raised in the church.
Oh.
Yes, my mother was a member of the church before she was a member of the church when she had me.
Wow.
So
oh yeah, you were literally
born into the church.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. And we focused a lot on performing.
How does one focus a lot on performing in the church?
Mr. Jacobs, who was over the arts program at my school at the time, he's the one who introduced a lot of us to the theater. Putting us on stage. We did a lot of different performances around the city of Sarasota. We did a lot of different performances around the state of Florida and around the country, performing with the church, you know, singing in the choir and, you know, doing different little church plays and things of that nature. So if we weren't singing in the church or doing something with the church, we were doing something in school, you know.
Okay, all right. So do you remember the first time?
The first time I was doing a show entitled Bruh Tiger and the Big Wind. Now this wasn't the first show I had performed in. This was the first the most fun I remember having.
Ah.
You know, and I had the opportunity to play a tiger. And yeah.
And how old were you?
How old was I when I played that role? I believe I was 11 years old.
Okay, so when do you think you started?
I started when I was 7.
Seven?
Yes.
Ooh, seven. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
What did you do?
I played a blue jay. Well, I mean, I ain't gonna say it was a blue jay. It was some type of bird. But the show was called Land of Harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And I played a bird. And
so you were doing this really as a very young child?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so tell me about the tiger and 11 and why it was fun.
Well, you know, I got to, it was the attention. You know what I mean? And I'm a person who likes to see people happy.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And anything that I can do to make a contribution to someone else's happiness, I'm all for it. And I saw the joy that what I was doing was bringing to the audience, and I saw the joy that it brought to them afterwards, everything that they were telling me, all the encouraging words they were giving me. And the more I did it, the more I began to figure out I just had a knack for it. You know what I mean? And the more different roles I got, they were always challenging, but it was always a thing where I was able to come out on top. And I was always a competitive person, you know what I mean? So I'm always the type of guy that likes to, you know, get it and make it happen regardless of how difficult it is at the beginning. So that's what the roles started out as. So it was more of a challenge, and then it was the fact that people were telling me that you were good, and I was getting it not just from people trying to encourage me, but I was hearing it from people who actually knew what they were doing, you know what I mean, as far as performance goes.
Other performers or directors or?
Both, performers and directors, you know, and mostly my peers. You know what I mean? I came up with a hard group of kids, you know, a hard group, because everybody was so talented.
And competitive.
Extremely competitive.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
And they weren't, my peers were never people that would, you know, just tell me I was good to make me feel good about myself. You know, if you were good, they're going to tell you you were. If you weren't, they're going to tell you you're not. Simple
ooh,
as that.
Ooh.
It was tough. But it was encouraging, and it was the type of environment that you need, that I needed. You know what I mean? So,
I'm curious. two things.
Mm-hmm.
The shows that were a challenge. I'm assuming the tiger was not a challenge. That role was easy for you, and
not at all.
Oh no! Tell me.
Not at all. That was my first. It was my first time I was being asked to play an animal. First of all, and having to do that, having to be that, was a little difficult because I was a child, you know what I mean? So my interpretation of a tiger was something totally different from what, you know, Mr. Jacobs wanted, you know what I mean?
Oh, so he directed you.
He did.
Yeah,
he
so did. Can you tell us a little bit about what you did or didn't do and what he said and how you incorporated it?
Well, he literally, Mr. Jacobs knows that I'm a visual person, you know what I mean? You have to show me what it is you want me to do, and then I'm able to give you my interpretation of whatever it is you showed me.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you just make your little tweaks in order to tell me whether you like it. And luckily, whenever Mr. Jacobs would give me an example of what it is.
So are you saying he would demonstrate?
He would physically show me what he wanted me to do.
Mm-hmm.
If I wasn't getting it right. He would physically show me what he wanted me to do. I would see it, then we were good from there. And that's the process that we took on for years.
For years, right.
Exactly.
All along, right.
Every time.
So he knows, right.
He knows how to deal with me.
He knows how to deal with you. I got it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, what, if you can remember, were the most challenging of those early roles?
Getting over the whole thing of feeling like I'm looking stupid in front of people. You know what I mean? Being self-conscious, is that what it is?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was the biggest hurdle I had to get over, you know, and that was the biggest hurdle to get over for years. I didn't get over that hurdle until I got to college.
Oh, hold on.
Oh,
let's back up.
Okay.
Because it's clear to me that you have gotten over that hurdle.
Yes.
I mean, I see you on stage, and there is nothing self-conscious about your performance, and it's very big always. It's always very, very big. You always are. I think I've said this to you after some shows, that when you're on stage, people are watching you. And some of it is because you're so, what is the word I want? Unselfconscious. So completely in the thing you're doing. Mm-hmm. Does this not mean anything to you?
A lot.
Yeah?
Yes, plenty.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. All right, good. Okay, so so we have you at 11,
yes, ma'am.
Right? And this is church and this is school.
Yes.
And Nate Jacobs is creating the shows and not only teaching you and bringing you along, but bringing along all those kids, right? Am I correct?
And, it wasn't just Nate Jacobs.
Oh.
It was, we were fortunate to have a combination of different people who are artistic. We had, I had also Vanetta Smith. She wrote a lot of the plays that we did younger, as children. I also had Miss Maria Watkins. I had Miss Cynthia Riley, who introduced me to African dance and different types of dance. And Miss Maria Watkins introduced me to music and the beauty of singing. And
Okay, back up. I want to hear about all of this. So was this part of school?
This was a part of school.
So these people were teachers?
They were teachers.
Okay, so
yes.
Talk about that. Talk about that. This is kind of interesting. The range of training that you got as a very young child.
Yes.
So your mother was in the church.
She was.
And the church was affiliated with the school?
The church and the school were one. Yes,
the
ma'am.
Church and the school were one.
Were the same, yes.
Right.
Ma'am.
Mm-hmm. So was your mother interested in performing or performing herself?
My mother was she's just a natural character.
I see.
You know, just all together. She has done a show before. And it was the first show she did. I believe it was A Raisin in the Sun. Yes, it was A Raisin in the Sun. She played the friend of the mother in the show. Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
and
okay.
It was her first time. Everyone thought that she had been performing all her life. You know what I mean? Because she's just that, you know.
She's a natural.
Natural. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question is no. She's never performed other than that one time.
So do you think that she became a member of that church with the idea that you would be a performer, or you don't know?
No, not at all.
No.
No.
So was she surprised? Was she pleased?
She was extremely.
She didn't know she had this little.
Not at all.
No.
All three of us were performers. I have four siblings. I'm not. There are four of us.
Four
total.
Of you, right?
Yes. My brother doesn't do anything remotely close to performing. My older brother, my sister Janana. You know Janana.
Yeah.
She performs. Obviously, she's a performer. My younger sister Kristen also. She too is a performer. She's out in Washington doing movies and commercials and things of that nature right now. My sister Kristen was the first one of us, though, to get into performing. She was the first one of us to say that that's what she wanted to do.
Well, I'm moving in that direction,
Okay. Actually.
So your mother did not have it in her mind that she was going to have a little acting troupe.
No.
Right?
Not at all.
So she came into this church for religious reasons.
Definitely.
Right? Okay,
yes,
good. Right. So then you said your older brother, did he participate at that time but doesn't do it now?
He didn't participate at all. No.
So were you guys, did they say, do you want to do this? Or did they just say, this is what you do now?
Well, it was kind of a combination of both. They pretty much tell you at the school, because you didn't have a choice.
No,
you know what
no,
I mean?
You're a student.
You had to do what you had to do to get the grade.
Yeah.
You know what
so,
I mean?
So this is a graded
yes.
Activity.
Yes. Most times when it was in Miss Watkins, because Miss Watkins, she did the music theory and the music and the chorus and all that kind of stuff. And you know, I'm sorry, Miss Watkins did the chorus. Miss Madeline Riley did the music theory. And those were the graded courses we had to take. But Miss Watkins was over the choir, the school choir at the same time. So those extracurricular activities that we did outside of church, because we did so much of it.
Right.
We also got
you got credit.
We got credit.
So was the were you in the chorus?
Definitely.
And that was a choice?
Yes.
Because you wanted to sing?
I did.
So when did you discover that you wanted to sing?
You know, it really wasn't necessarily about the singing, because I'm not a fan of singing. It was more so about the fellowship. You know what I mean?
Ah.
All the prettiest girls were in the choir. You know what I mean? So naturally, I want to be where the prettiest girls are. You know?
It just happens. You can sing.
That's it. I sang good enough. They kept me in the choir.
Oh, amazing!
So it all worked out. You know what I mean? I was never the one, you know, leading all the songs and none of that. I was just a tenor.
You sing good enough.
Good enough. You know,
okay.
Good enough to stay in. So that's what it was. That's what kept me in. And the performance side of that evolved from singing in the choir. I was noticed by, you know, Miss. They would give me opportunity to do certain things.
Yeah, a role that had singing.
Exactly.
Because they knew you could sing.
Yeah, so they would give me different opportunities to do different things, whether it was dance and
singing. Well, now I'm getting to the dance. So, because you're an amazing dancer. So, was this another course? I mean, did they teach dance? Or
No, you're just a natural dancer? No, I was just a natural dancer. We had a lot of choreography and things we would do in our shows. And
so they didn't teach it.
No.
But in the performance, it was part of the role.
Yes.
And the somebody, a director, a choreographer? Did
yes,
they have
Ms.
a choreographer?
Ms. Cynthia Riley at that time did a lot of our, she introduced me to a lot of different dances, different forms of dancing. From she introduced me to African dancing. She introduced me to ballet.
And how did she do that? Was that
just within different? We had chapel programs that we would put on every Friday,
mm-hmm.
and different teachers would be over different chapel programs.
So
you know what I'm saying? Miss Cynthia Riley, whenever she would do her chapel programs, she would generally introduce everybody to different forms of dance,
right?
Because she was into that.
God, you were a lucky guy.
Yeah, it just turned out that way.
You were a lucky guy. You got training in all of these things.
Yes, ma'am.
Right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so are you thinking at any point that you want to make a life of this work? Or are you just going along to get along?
I'm just going along.
Yeah.
I'm just going along with it because it's fun. You know,
yeah.
At that time, at a very early age, I was an aspiring athlete. I just knew I was going to play football in the NFL. Football, and after I retired from playing football, I was going to go into pharmacy.
Good grief.
And, you know, going to, not necessarily pharmacy, but going to medicine.
Yeah.
And I figured pharmacy was my best gateway into it.
Yeah, I got it. Mm-hmm. So did you play football as a kid?
I did. Yes, ma'am.
Did. Okay, so when, do you remember when you began to think, well, maybe not football, you know?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. My freshman year in high school. High school was around the time where, you know, a lot of the environment that I was in, the school that I was in, you have to begin to focus on whatever it is you want to do. You have to have a career path, set goals.
Okay, so now, was high school separate from the church school? Or
no,
this is
it was all the way through.
Yes, so now they're saying to you guys, okay, you have to start thinking about what you want to do because we have to create a career path.
Mm-hmm. And they really wouldn't say it in those exact words, but the teachings and the teachings that we would get on a daily basis, it lets you know. Because we were taught the way we learned a lot about Jesus, you know what I mean? And Jesus began to be about his father's business at a very early age. He was only 13 years old,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? And according to my teachings and what I had always learned about Jesus, I was already 2-3 years already too
late.
Yeah,
right. You're behind the curve.
Yeah, I'm late. You know what I mean? So,
right.
You know, so that was always that was something that I've always, you know, internalized.
Catch up.
You know? Yeah, exactly. So by the time I hit about 14 years old, it was either I was going to go into pharmacy and
right.
You're football,
gonna go do that,
or
right.
I was going to focus on performing, and I just decided to focus on performing.
Okay, now you said your sister Kristen was the first one who
yes.
said she wanted to do it.
Yes.
So how much younger than you is she?
Just a year.
Oh, okay. So she'd already decided. She'd already decided.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you said to yourself, I guess,
mm-hmm.
Okay, this is my career path.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say that to anybody else?
No, ma'am.
No.
I mean, to the people that matter.
To the people that matter?
Yeah.
You told?
I told Mr. Jacobs. He knew what I wanted to do. Ms. Smith knew what I wanted to do. Ms.
You
Wise.
Told, yeah, right.
I told my teachers what I wanted to do.
Right.
They knew
right.
what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they could help.
Exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Very smart. Okay, good. So you say to them, okay, I've decided this is what I want to do. And they say, okay, good, or want to have a back thing to fall back on, or
there is no plan B.
There's no plan B.
There is no plan B.
You're gonna do it. You're gonna go for it.
Yes, exactly.
And they said, "Good, and we think you can."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well.
Well, not even that. They just okay and
okay, okay, and all right.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then, high school.
Mm-hmm.
Do you change your approach? Do you become more serious? Or you just keep doing what you were doing, figuring it'll all work out.
Yeah, I was just going through the motions.
Yeah,
you
were a
kid. Just doing what I did and going through the motions. I was, just doing whatever I was asked to do. I didn't take it serious at the time. I thought I was, you know what I mean? Just because I said I wanted to do it, I figured, now I have, figured out what I want to do. Now this is what I want to do and I'm doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And I wasn't doing nearly... I wasn't even scratching the surface of doing nearly enough.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I was way far behind. But as a child, as a teenager, you know, we think that that's all that matters in our little lives. You know, we don't understand that there's a bigger, broader scope, bigger world other than the confines of the four walls of our high school. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and in addition to that, your experience had been that you just had to put in what you put in and it was enough.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have... I mean, you had to work a little,
mm-hmm.
you know, you had to, mm-hmm. but
But you had always been able to, right? Without terrible effort.
And then there was no one in that environment that was giving me that encouragement.
Yeah,
that was pushing you. No, they were all pushing me, but no one was actually trained in that area. They didn't necessarily know what it took to be where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
You know, they were just encouraging me to keep on going.
Right, I got it. Mm-hmm. I got it.
And they always encouraged me to think outside the box and look for other people who were trained in the area and study the people who had been doing what I've been doing and got the proper training so I would know what it took to, you know, be on that level or better.
Yeah, but you have to have it.
But you got
to
have it.
It doesn't matter what everybody says. You have to have it. Right, okay.
You have to have
it. So I'm assuming that, I think what you said was you got it when you went to college. Am I correct about that?
Yes, I had a professor.
Well, hold on. Okay. What did you major in?
Performance theater.
You did?
Yes.
Okay. So yes, then you're saying now to the world, this is what I want to do.
Definitely.
Okay. So you're in college. And so tell me, how did it?
I went to Florida A&M University and I was given a full scholarship there through the theater department from Mr. Luther Wells, who's the director of the theater department, the essential theater department there at Florida A&M.
Okay. So right off the bat, you get the sense that, I mean, if you have the scholarship, that they think that you're able to do this.
Yes, ma'am.
Right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, okay. ma'am. It was, Mr. Jacobs was the one who made, he was the one who recommended I go to Florida A&M. And that's how I ended up deciding to go to Florida A&M. Plus, my mother had gone to, she's a graduate of Florida A&M, so she was pushing the point, too.
Yeah.
So it all worked itself out. It all worked itself out. And I was at Florida A&M. And I was a part of the Essential Theater Program, majoring in performance theater. I was doing my first performance as a freshman. And it was unique because at the time they didn't necessarily allow freshmen to have lead roles in the theater department. But because I was advanced, they allowed me to be one of the first freshmen to have a starring role in one of their productions. Me and another friend of mine, we were the first freshmen to get starring roles, and I was introduced to Mr. Reggie Kelly.
Well, wait a minute, what was the role?
Oh, it was Spunk.
Oh, wow. Spunk. Yeah.
That was the first show. We did the theater.
Yeah, you did it here, mm-hmm. right.
And I played the exact same roles in Spunk in college as I did. Well, not necessary, because I played lead man in the third story, Gilded Six Bits. The husband. I played the husband in Gilded Six Bits, and I played Sweetback in Jelly's Last Chance, the second show.
Right.
So, yeah, those were the, but I played the same old man in the first.
So how did you feel about it?
It was great, man. That was my first time working with a director. Remember I was telling you how you hear things from people who don't necessarily know the business? I worked with Reggie Kelly, and it was an eye-opening experience,
yeah.
You know, and it gave me my introduction to life. And what the world of performance is outside of the church, you know what I mean? Because the world, it's a whole other world. It's a whole new language. It's a whole new everything. They don't spare your feelings. And it was the second night of rehearsal, and Mr. Reggie Kelly, me and Alfred had been, just playing around in rehearsal that evening. We weren't necessarily taking the situation serious. And we were sitting on our break, and we were continuing to play around. And we had gone and said something to Mr. Kelly at the time. He was upset about the rehearsal process and how everything was going or whatever. And he looked at us and said, excuse my French, said, look, man, I'm going to tell y'all right now. Y'all ain't shit. He said, you ain't shit. You have been hearing from people in your lives, people in your churches, in your school, wherever it is you came from before you got here, that you good. He said, but I'm going to tell you right now, those motherfuckers don't know what they're talking about. He said, you ain't shit. And until you develop a passion and learn what this is, you still ain't gonna be shit. I don't care nothing about this show you in. This don't mean nothing. You know what I mean? I can get anybody else to do what I got you doing right now.
Wow.
And yeah. That was it.
Yes, he threw down the gauntlet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that was my first time anybody had ever talked to me like that.
Yeah, right.
Outside of my friends.
Yeah,
you know what
right,
I mean? But
right.
A director talking, I'm like, man. And it was very, it let me know, you know, that's, it clicked. I have been lied to all my life. Not that they
No,
were
you've
doing
been coasting.
It. Yeah, you know, not that they've been, you know, maliciously telling me, like,
no.
You know, but everybody had been telling me you have to get serious about it. But the way he said it, it was you know, it let me know you really have to get serious about this, because if you want to take this seriously, and if you don't take this seriously, life is going to knock you down.
It's going to run right over you.
A lot worse than what I'm giving you right now.
Yeah, right.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So it was an eye-opening experience for me, and I began to take it, I began to take that particular role a lot more serious. And then later on, during my time in college, I decided I wanted to leave. Because I had just decided I didn't like the whole environment, you know what I mean? I didn't like school. And I told Mr. Wells that I was going to leave and pursue my professional career. And Mr. Wells told me, well, Dean, I really don't care where you decide to go or what you decide to do, but I'm going to let you know right now that you're not going to be nothing until you develop a passion for whatever it is you want to do. You know what I mean? And at that point, it clicked in me that I wasn't going to be anything until I developed a passion for my wanting to be an actor, for performing. And I didn't know what it meant at that time.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
I do.
I didn't know what it meant at that time. And it wasn't until I got,
So did you stay in school?
No,
or you
I
left?
Didn't.
Oh, no, you
I
left.
I left after my sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I left after I finished my sophomore year in school, and I just decided I didn't want to go back. Simple as that. And I got my first role, my first professional role, I got through Mr. Jacobs in the West Coast Black Theater Troupe, because at that time, by that time, it had already been established. And
What had been established?
The theater troupe had been established.
Ah, yes.
Yes, the theater troupe had been established.
So when was that? Do you remember?
2001.
And what was the role?
No, I'm sorry, 2002 was when, 2003 was when I got my, 2002, yeah, it was 2002. When I got my first role.
And what was it?
It was an ensemble member in a show called Bumbling Brown Sugar.
Ah, yeah.
It was Bumbling Brown Sugar. No, I'm sorry, Yubi.
Yubi.
Yes, it was Yubi. My cousin had dropped. My cousin was actually playing the role that they dropped. He dropped out the show, and I ended up having to fill in for him. So that was my first.
Okay, so you drop out of school. Do you have plans?
Yes, my plans were to pursue my acting career.
And how were you going to do that?
Audition.
You were just going to try and get work?
Yeah.
So you thought you were ready?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I did.
So what are you, a big 18, 20 years old?
18.
19. 19, right.
I was 19.
Right, 19.
Yep.
Right, and you're ready. You got everything you need, and you're out of here, right?
I was ready.
I got it.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
What
yes,
happened?
Ma'am. I did a couple of shows. And I was hired to do another show. It was the Burt Williams story, and I missed. It wasn't the Burt Williams story. It was something else.
It doesn't matter.
It don't matter. But
here or somewhere else?
It was here.
Yeah.
Here.
Right.
And Reggie Kelly, the same director who told me I wasn't shit.
Right.
My freshman year fam was here to direct this particular show with the theater troupe.
Wow.
And Reggie Kelly ended up firing me from this show, you know, because I was lollygagging. I wasn't coming to rehearsals.
Yeah, he was saying you're
time.
Still shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And, you know, I wasn't coming to rehearsals on time. He fired me from the show. And the night he fired me from the show, he pulled me outside. And he had a long talk with me, and he was talking, he had tears in his eyes. He was literally crying.
Wow.
You know, because he was explaining to me how much potential that I had, and how much I was wasting it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, bullshitting, lollygagging around and not taking it seriously.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And he was saying how, he was explaining to me that the reason why he was crying was because he had seen so many talented young men just like myself just, you know, piss their careers away because
right.
You want to bullshit around, not take it serious and play around and do everything else except perfect your craft and develop
right.
your passion for it. And seeing the tears in his eyes and seeing how much that hurt him, it hurt me, you know, just as much. I was even more mad at myself, you know, for bringing him to that point because, like I told you before, my whole purpose and goal of doing this was the fact of seeing people happy.
Yeah,
you know
so,
what I'm
yes,
saying?
Sir, yeah.
So,
it's perfect.
I'm looking at this man crying, and I'm thinking, well, damn, dude, I'm just getting fired. It ain't no big deal. I'm just going to do another show next month. But when he was crying like that, I understood what he was saying behind all those tears, and I knew that I had not yet developed my passion for. I thought back at what Mr. Wells told me before I left FAM. I'm looking at this situation and I'm thinking, damn, dude, you still ain't got it, you know. And that was my, at that point it clicked, you know what I mean. And I began to do whatever, I began to do things, I began to, I talk to God, because that's what I do a lot of. I ask God to help me to learn how to develop my passion and place me in situations that will cause me to have nothing to do but focus on theater and perfecting my craft, perfecting the passion for that. And I began to change what I was in love with, which was performing, and began to switch it to being in love with the process of getting to the point of performing.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And once I did that, that's when I began to realize and develop, that's when I begin to realize that I love this. You know what I'm saying? I really do love this shit, you know?
yeah, to
the nth degree. You know, I love performing. I love meeting people. I love rehearsing. I love...
You love the work.
It's a beautiful thing because you learn so much from different directors, because everyone has a different walk of life. And I feel like artistic people are the most interesting people you could ever come across in all aspects of art. Mm-hmm. Of art. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
And when you work with different directors, I've worked with different directors. I work with directors who have never performed, but they're so inept in what it takes to bring about an emotion or to bring out whatever it is that character requires. It's beautiful because you sit with them outside of the rehearsal process and you talk to them about any and everything else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a whole life-changing experience once you develop a passion for the work.
The work itself.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that this happens to a lot of people who are naturally talented, that it comes so easy and people are so delighted to see it in its early stages that they don't get this, you know, because their experience has been, well, I don't have to, you know, I don't have to. I can just do what I do and it'll be enough, right? And a lot of people don't get, I believe a lot of people don't get what you got, which is why this guy was crying, because he could see all of the people who didn't get it, right, who could have gotten it, right. So lucky for you. And it's so interesting to me that you say, and I believe you absolutely, that the power of seeing him hurt spoke to you, because for you, at the beginning anyway, the joy was making people happy. And so it's like tilt. It's like, you know, oh God, you know, what am I doing here, right? This is wonderful. Okay, so you're 19, 20 years old, and you begin the process which leads to falling in love with the work for its own sake.
Yes, ma'am.
That's great. Okay. So then what did you do?
I just began to take more classes. I began to focus on perfecting my audition, you know what I mean? I began to book more gigs and book more auditions outside of Florida. I began to travel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I did my first, I was introduced to me and my sister, and I went to SETC, Southeastern Theater Convention. I don't want to quote it. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, we went there for our first audition, and it was out in Charlotte, North Carolina. And that was my first time, you know, going off abroad, meeting other actors who were in the business that were doing it, you know, professionally on a regular basis. The whole lifestyle, the whole, just the fast pace of the convention is what also caused me to, you know, fall in love with it even more. You know what I mean? And then me, I'm a people person, so you're getting to meet other people. You're getting to network and figure out the other auditions that are going on around the world, around the state. You know what I mean? So you realize at that point that it's a whole nother world. You know, how big and extensive the theater world is outside of what I was getting at West Coast, outside of what I was getting at FAM, outside of what I was getting at the West Coast Black Theater Troupe when I first started working with them. You know what I mean? You're exposed to all these beautiful things, all these beautiful people. And that was another thing that began to cause me to develop a passion for it. But my audition wasn't as strong as it needed to be because I had never actually, you know, worked on that.
Right.
You know, so then I developed, I got myself an acting coach, Harry Bryce. And I was introduced to Harry Bryce through the theater troupe when we had done sophisticated ladies. And we performed it over at the Manatee Players. This was back and way a long time ago. And this was my first time being introduced to Harry and Donald Friesen at that time. Donald Friesen, they came together. Donald Friesen introduced me to tap dance, and Harry introduced me to modern dance performance and just a whole new world of performing, you know. He showed me how important it was to break down a character and the whole process of learning about a character deeper than just the dancing and the singing and the words.
The performing.
The flash, the glitz,
exactly, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
right? He helped me to realize that that's a person that you have to give reverence to. You know what I mean? You have to give reverence to that being because someone took time to give that person a life.
Yeah.
You know, and a spirit. You know, and you have to feel that. And he introduced me to that and helped me to apply that to each and every character I've ever portrayed from that point on. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So naturally, he became my acting coach, and he began to introduce me to how important it was to develop your audition piece. Or he reintroduced that to me, because they had already taught me about that at FAMU, but I wasn't getting it because I wasn't necessarily paying attention.
No, right.
It was going in one ear and coming out the other. You know, so things didn't start sticking until after the situation where Reggie was crying.
Right. I got it.
So Harry was telling me all of these things, and Harry began to teach me and train me with my audition pieces. He's the one who helped develop my audition and get that even stronger. And at that point, I began to get more work. I began to work, and I did my first gig over in Crossville, Tennessee, with the Cumberland County Playhouse. And me and both of my sisters were casting that show, which was a wonderful experience. So the first time performing off of Broadway was with my sisters, and that was wonderful. We had the most fun. And we did, the show was called Crowns, and Harry directed the show. And from that point on, I would just look up different auditions in different states, go to those different states and do those auditions in hopes of getting a job. And, you know, by the grace of God, I was able to land jobs in a lot of those different companies in different states I would work for. And in between, every now and then, I would come back to Sarasota and, you know, do shows with the theater troupe. But it's just been, it took off since that first show in Tennessee. And it's all about networking and who you know. Because once you get your foot in a door and people know what you're capable of doing, they generally tend to call you back when they have something else. So
yeah,
it's like a continuous cycle. And you look up, I look up, you know, a good, you know, 14 years down the line. And I realized, man, I've been making a living out of this, you know, since then, you know, since I decided.
And you know how rare that is.
Extremely.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yes. And you don't, and you don't think about it necessarily until you're talking to somebody else who, you know, has to get a 9-to-5 and they have to depend on other things outside of theater. And you think to yourself, well, man, how can you call yourself a performer if you're waiting tables or if you're working at McDonald's or working in the department store? I mean, I get it, but there's always a way if you have the passion to go out and get it. You know what I mean?
If you make it the priority.
You can make
it,
yeah.
Right.
You know, you got to put that out there. You got to tell God. If you say to God, that's what you want to do, He'll make a way for you to do that. That's been my experience. That's all I can say.
No, I got it. But I think this is the result of making this the passion in your
life.
Exactly. And not everybody has your talent, so it is possible for people to have the passion but not have the work because they don't have your talent.
Yeah. I mean,
okay, talk to me about Jethro Jenkins, because I don't know who that is.
Oh, yeah. Jethro Jenkins. Jethro Jenkins is a character that I developed one day. You know, I just came up with Jethro Jenkins. I was listening to a song in my bathroom by Teddy Pendergrass.
What was it?
Get Up, Get Down, Get Funky, Get Loose. And it came on my Pandora, you know. So I'm listening to this song, and I'm thinking to myself, man, this is a fun ass song, because I found myself in the bathroom,
yeah.
You know,
all right,
jamming,
moving,
yeah. And I'm thinking, this is a fun ass song. I love it. I love the whole message behind it, and that's how Jethro Jenkins came about. It's a name that I've always played with. You know what I mean? I would, you know, it was, you know, I prank people every now and then and say, hey, what's up, I'm Jethro Jenkins, you know what I'm saying, just a little, just something to play around with. And listening to that song, I thought about, I just said, man, this show sure enough be fun to sing a bunch of Teddy Pendergrass songs, and what other reason could I do it outside of being Teddy Pendergrass? So let's just say, happy birthday, Jethro Jenkins, because I thought a party, Jethro Jenkins, a birthday party, so let's just write a whole show based off of, you know, this song, and base a character off this song, you know what I'm saying? So that's how the whole Jethro Jenkins thing came about.
Okay, so tell me, when does it open? Is it only one night, or?
Yes, it is one night right now. It's one night on the 31st of October.
Okay, so the 31st of October, happy birthday, Jethro Jenkins.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And what it is, it's a block party. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's Jethro Jenkins' birthday, and this character is a big fan of Teddy Pendergrass. And so his friends from the city that he lives in, which is Chicago, they know that he's a big fan. They decide to come together, and, you know, being that they're all different artists, to play different instruments, they come together and they say, we're going to sit on your porch with you, man, and we're just going to play all your favorite Teddy Pendergrass songs and let you sing them to the neighborhood or whoever wants to listen.
Oh, that's great. You know what I mean?
So it's just simply Jethro Jenkins, and we're all getting to know Jethro Jenkins and who he is through the music of Teddy Pendergrass.
I got it. In one way or another, you have given your entire life to this work.
Yes, ma'am.
So what would you say about what that's like, what that means to you? Anything at all that speaks to how you feel about this work?
I mean, you know, I love it. You know, I love it. It's not even, I don't even look at it as work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at work as something that's hard, it's strenuous, you know what I mean? And it's not, I don't find any difficulty in doing what I do whatsoever. I find more difficulty there's more of a challenge in figuring out what this character is, who this person is, and how I can paint the picture the best way I can and take all of me out and give you all of whatever this character is. I find that to be the most challenging aspect of it, and I love that. I love it, you know what I mean? It's so much fun. You know, I can't explain how much love I have for the process. So for me to refer to it as work, it'd be kind of wrong.
Mm-hmm. I got it.
You know?
I got it.
Because it's like walking. It's like breathing. You know what I mean? It's what I do. And it's so easy and it's so natural for me. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, putting on a clean pair of socks every day. You know what I mean? So that's the best way to describe it. It's effortless at this point.
Yeah.
You know? I know it's through the blessings of Jesus Christ, and it's through the training that I've gotten. It's not anything that I brought about myself.
Except all the work you did.
You know, I had to do the work, but I was placed in that position to do that work because of, you know, God and the people that I was placed around. So I have to give all the credit to that, and that's what makes it feel like, I feel like I don't necessarily have a job, and I feel like working within your career should feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you were meant to do whatever it is you're doing, it's not going to feel like work, you know?
It's a great place to stop. Thank you so much, Early Dean.
Thank you.
Come out and see him.
When you are doing what you were meant to do, it doesn't feel like work. It isn't work because I love it, because it's so much fun, because it's what I was meant to do. Of course, this is what it feels like when you are being the person you really are, when you are being the person you were meant to be. And how do you know if you are being the person that you were meant to be? Well, it doesn't feel like work. It feels like putting on a clean pair of socks. It feels like breathing in and out. It feels natural. It feels easy. It feels effortless. It feels like what you should be doing. It feels like fun. It doesn't mean that there isn't hard work involved when you're being yourself, when you're being the person you really are. But the ease of it is what makes the hard of it not seem like a struggle or not seem onerous. So, is your life like that? Effortless? Fun? full of the love of it? Or are you struggling every day to do the things you have to do, to be the person that you have to be, to act in a way that is not natural to you, not normal to you, but somehow requires an effort? So if you are struggling in that way, if you are doing something that you have to drag yourself to, that you have to force yourself to do, consider the possibility that there is a way of being in the world that feels better to you. Now, sometimes we have to do things in our life that we don't want to do because we need to make the money for it, right? But even if that is a requirement in your life, that doesn't mean that in other aspects of your life you cannot be completely the person that you are. This is not all about what you do for a living. It's not all about finding a passion for a work. It's about being the person you really are. In Early's case, for a long time, he was being a person who was kind of phoning it in, who was fooling around, who wasn't taking himself seriously. And then he discovered that in actual fact, he is someone who can take his life seriously. And that made all the difference. It made it possible for him to do the work he's doing, but the discovery of himself as a person who could give himself to something truly, that was the important thing. So, are you giving yourself to your life? Not to the work you do, although that too, of course, but are you being the person you really are? Or, as I said earlier, are you second-guessing yourself? Should I do this? Shouldn't I do this? Should I say this? Shouldn't I say this? Should I be this? Shouldn't I be this? It's really hard to live like that. And so I'm going to say again that if you find yourself doing that in any aspect of your life, you can find me at my website, thelynshow.com, thelynshow. Just click on the email tab and ask me any question. We're going to go out on a Teddy Pendergrass song, so you get a little taste of what you're going to hear when you come to see Happy Birthday, Jethro Jenkins by Early Dean. But as always, I want to say that I hope you got something that you can use from this show. Something that intrigued you, that inspired you, that amused you, something that will bring you back. Because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
Looking back over my years, I guess I shed some tears. I told myself time and time again, this time I'm gonna win. But another fight, things ain't right, I'm losing again. Takes a fool to lose twice, start all over. I better let it go. Looks like another love TKO. Oh, think I better let it go. What you think about it, girl? Oh yeah. Of time and have a change of mind. Taking the bumps and the bruises of all the things of a two-time age. Trying to hold on, faith is gone. It's just another sad song. Think I better let go. What you say about it? Looks like another love TKO.
time and have a change of mind. Taking the bumps and the bruises of all the things of a two-time loser. See, I try to hold on, my faith is gone. It's just another sad song. But I think I better let it go. Let it go. Cause it feels like I'm bad.
I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. Like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten